Okay, good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to call the meeting to order. And the requirement that we have with regard to an electronic meeting, I need to read the preamble. In accordance with state law regarding public meetings held via electronic equipment, this meeting will be recorded and the recording will be posted on CHIPA's website. Because there's no public comment on today's agenda, members of the public will not be permitted to speak during the meeting with the exception of CHIPA consultants and professionals. And in accordance with Governor Lamont's executive order regarding public meetings held electronically, board members and CHIPA consultants and professionals must state their name and title before speaking. So with that, I'd like to start with a roll call. And I'll start with Chief of Board Members. I'm Peter Lisi, Board Chair. Mike Angelini.
Present.
Thank you. Lawrence Davis. Lawrence?
Lawrence is connecting, it looks like.
All right. Well, I'll give him a call. I'll ask for his attendance in a minute. Steve Elbaum. I know Steve was a maybe. Steve, are you on? No. Daryl Hill.
Present.
Thank you. Kimberly Kennison. Kimberly? No. Susan Martin.
Present.
Thank you. Alan Matamana. I'm not expecting. And Mark Vahalik. It's going to be a no. Okay.
Hi, Peter. It's Lawrence Davis. I'm here.
Great. Thank you, Lawrence.
Peter, can you hear me? It's Kim Kennison.
Yes, I can hear you now, Kim.
Sorry, I was here all the time. I just couldn't figure out how to get myself off mute.
Okay.
Thank you.
And I'm not sure about everyone else. I can see the top of your head, Kim, but that's all. There we go. There you are. Thank you. Okay, Chief of Staff, Jeanette Weldon.
Yes, present.
Denise Aguilera. Denise? No, Denise?
Yeah, she's here. We can't hear her for some reason.
Well, Denise, when you get unmuted, if you could indicate your presence. Jessica Bishop?
Present.
Thank you. Dan Junge? Dan? No? Josh Herlock?
I'm here.
Thank you, Josh. Bob Jandro.
Present.
Thank you. Dan Karowski.
Present.
Thank you. Carly Levin.
Present.
Thank you. Joanne Makowitz.
Present.
Thank you. Michael Morris.
Present.
Marlene Pagan.
Here.
Thank you. Cynthia Peoples.
I'm here.
Thank you. Julia Polano.
Present.
Kara Stewart.
Present.
Betty Weintraub. Not yet.
Present. Anyone?
Oh, Betty is here. Hello, Betty. Anyone else from CHIPA or CHESLA whose name I didn't call? And Denise, are you on? Still no Denise. Okay. Consultants and vendors, when I call your company's name, if you could please identify yourself if you were on the call. Acacia Financial Group?
Josh Nikita.
All right. Just you, Josh?
Yes, just me, Peter.
Okay, thank you. Carmody Torrance?
Ann Zucker's here.
Thank you, Ann. Dave Pitney?
Hi, Namita Shah is on.
Thank you. Hardwick Law Firm.
Debbie Henry's on.
Thank you. Hawkins Delafield Wood.
Lori Hall's on.
Thank you. Hinckley Allen.
Chesky Clark is on.
Thank you. Anyone from McCarter in English? McCarter in English. No? Public Financial Management, PFM.
Trina Smith is here.
Thank you, Trina. Pullman and Conway.
Eric Russell is here.
Thank you. Robinson and Cole.
Ed Simmerich is on.
Thank you, Ed. And Shipman and Goodwin.
Bruce Chadwick is on.
Thank you, Bruce. Did I miss anyone from consultants or vendors? Anyone else? Anyone? Okay, give one more shout out for Denise Aguilera. Denise, are you on the call?
Yep. Can you hear me? Sorry, Peter.
Yeah, we can hear you now. Great. Thank you. Okay, with the roll call done, we can begin the published agenda. First item being the minutes from our February 16th meeting. Again, as I usually say, I hope people have taken a few minutes to read them and review them. And I would entertain a motion to accept the minutes.
It's Mike Angelini, board member. I'll move.
Thank you, Mike. Is there a second?
Susan Martin, I can second that.
Thank you, Susan. All right, we've got a motion. We've got a second to accept the meetings. Is there any discussion? Any edits, clarifications, corrections to the minutes?
I Peter, this is Lawrence. Yes. On page, hold on page five of the minute, yep. The bullet point, I think that after it says June 30, 2023 will be replaced by sulfur and then comma and.
All right.
That paragraph.
I don't have that in front of me, so I'm going to defer to my other, my colleagues on the board, if you've had that in front of you.
I can send it to someone just okay. So that they have it.
All right, Lawrence, could you indicate it one more time? I apologize, it's Mike Angelini, by the way.
Hey, Mike, it's Lawrence. Page five. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
It's page 10. It's page 10 of the packet. And it talks about market updates. If you go down to the last bullet and the second to the last sentence, starting with interbank offered rate will be phased out by June 30, 2023, and will be replaced by SOFR.
Yes.
The buyer is missing. And after the semicolon and.
Okay. Yep.
Okay, I'm looking at it now, Lawrence. Thank you, Kara, for putting it up on the screen. So you're suggesting the word and get inserted there?
After semicolon, it's replaced before so it's the word.
Yep.
By
and beginning.
By and then.
Yep.
Yeah.
Fine. Good catch.
Thanks.
Anyone else? Any other clarifications, edits, or corrections? All right. Motion has been made and seconded. With that correction, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Is there anyone opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you very much. Motion carries. Minutes are approved. Next item of business, Michael Morris.
Peter, yes. It's Kim. I'm sorry. I was trying to get off mute. I do need to abstain.
Okay. One abstention. Thank you, Kim.
Yep.
Okay, next item is the annual report on our higher ed sector. Turn over to Michael Morris.
All righty. If Kara can put it up there, that'd be great. All right, thank you. All right, next slide, please, Kara. Overall, I think our 10 institutions fared pretty well considering all the challenges that faced the sector. This is mainly fueled by record investment returns, with the median increasing 20%, which led to improved cushion for debt and operations. And one metric we looked at was the monthly days of cash on hand. That's the one that improved 26% from 361 days to 456 days. Despite negative tuition growth, the institutions were able to contain expense growth and had significant revenue growth, mainly from the investment returns, which led to strong operating cash flow margins. Although the debt service coverage median was at the second lowest level in the past 5 years, but still remains adequate for the sector. This last fall, looks like applications have increased, mainly attributed to Yale, but we'll talk about that. Very slight increase in the median selectivity, and matriculations improved somewhat, but they're still lagging their five-year high. But enrollment is at its highest level over the past 5 years, improving for 7 of the 10 institutions. All right, next slide. Our portfolio overview, of 4.8 billion represents about 57% of Chief's total portfolio. Yale accounts for 62% of that total outstanding. As you can see in the blue there, 91% is unenhanced. And at 6.3 is the SCARC back. That's for the Connecticut State University system. That's the fourth highest borrower behind Yale, Quinnipiac, and Sacred Heart. Unlike what we saw last month with the bank direct purchases, it only accounts for 2.8% of the sector. And you can see on the right there, we did a comparison to the overall debt outstanding for CHIFA, and it pretty much mirrors that, with the exception of the private placement, which mainly consists of the independent schools. Okay, next slide, please. 9 of the 10 institutions have ratings. Only University of St. Joseph does not. And they probably would be a borderline investment grade. You can see there in the yellow, Fairfield's rating was upgraded by Moody's from A3 to A2. And the outlook was revised from positive to stable. This was with the conjunction that their loan that just closed. And in January, with the Connecticut College offering, Moody's revised their outlook from stable to negative. It's mainly driven by the large increase that they were borrowing, the $50 million for the bond issue that closed. Next slide. So over the past 5 years, 20 bond issues have closed, totaling $1.7 billion. That's pretty much a 50-50 split with the refundings and new monies, although 8 of the 10 issuance were for new money, along with the Connecticut State University system. Although the total amount of direct purchase, as the total amount outstanding is low, there was 13.1% of the total money funded with direct purchases, but many of those were already paid off. And Yale accounted for approximately 27% of the total issued, followed by Sacred Heart issuing around 20% of the total. Next slide. Nearly 140,000 applications were received for the fiscal year 2022. That's up 7.3% from the prior year and up almost 11% from 5 years ago. Like I said before, this is mainly attributed to Yale, whose applications increased 34.1% from roughly 35,000 to 47,000. Excluding Yale, however, total applications declined 2.7% from the prior year, although the median is at its highest level in the past 5 years. We had 3 institutions that reported a decline in applications, mainly led by Quinnipiac, 20.5% and from the prior year, and 28.7% since fiscal year 2018. University of St. Joseph also had a decline, but it's still about 85% higher than it was five years ago. And only Connecticut College, Fairfield University, and Sacred Heart University all reported increases in applications in each of the past 5 years.
This is Peter Lisi. This might be a more appropriate question later on in the agenda when we talk about the preliminary memo for Quinnipiac, but a 20% drop in applications is pretty significant. Is there any more of a story there as to what's going on or why? And again, maybe we'll address it during the, I guess it's agenda item number 5, but is there?
Yes, we did inquire about that, and Bob will delve into that during the presentation. Okay. So I don't want to give it away right now.
Okay.
Okay, next slide. Selectivity. Although I said it's at its highest level in the past 5 years, it's only slightly higher than the prior four-year average. But only three institutions were more selected in 22 than they were in the prior year. You can see in the wide range of acceptance rates from 5.3 for Yale, which I think is their lowest ever that I can recall, all the way up to 94% for the University of New Haven. Matriculation improved from the prior year, but the median is much lower than the 22.2% for the past from 5 years ago. We have four of the 10 institutions reporting a lower yield than the prior year, and only four institutions are above Moody's median around 20%. Like I said before, total enrollment increased 5.7% from the prior year, and it's at its highest level in the past 5 years. Some notable improvements over the past 5 years include Sacred Heart, which is up 19.4%, and Fairfield University, which is up 14.6%. Okay, next slide, please. As I mentioned, to the favorable investment returns, financial resources grew 35.6% from the prior year and over 57.1% over the past 5 years. However, Yale and Wesleyan accounted for approximately 93% of the total financial resources. There was improved cash investments to debt on the median 2.1% increase from the prior four-year average, 1.9%, but still below Moody's median. We only have four institutions that were above Moody's median. But you can see there in the aqua there, each institution has more available financial resources than the amount of debt outstanding. And you look at the cushion for operations, the median of 2.6 times is favorable to Moody's median, with every institution improving coverage from the prior year. And we only have one institution, the University of New Haven, that has less than 1 year's reserves to cover operations. Next slide, please. As I mentioned before, the median was up from 356 to 456, increasing 26%. All 10 institutions have improved their days cash on hand position from the prior year. Over the past 5 years, we had some notable increases, which included the University of St. Joseph, up 251%, up from 58 days to 202 days. And then Connecticut College increased 79%, and Quinnipiac University improved 74%. And they have a very impressive 933 days, days cash on hand. Next slide. We had seven institutions that experienced a decline in net tuition for 2021, and the median declined from negative 0.7% to negative 1.7%. Yale reported the largest decline in net tuition revenue at 23.1%. This was largely caused by a number of deferrals and leaves of absences that students took due to the pandemic. However, tuition revenue only accounts for 6% of the university's total operating revenue. And over the past 5 years, we've seen an increase in the tuition discount, steadily increased from 34.8% to 40.7%, which added additional pressures to the growth in the net tuition revenues. And we only have one institution, actually for the past 2 years, Sacred Heart University, that had net tuition revenue growth in excess of 5%.
Michael, okay. were they the same one in fiscal 20 as well?
Yes, both in 20 and 21. It was Sacred Heart in both years.
Both times. Thank you.
Okay, next slide. We had all but two institutions improve their operating margin, with one institution with an operating loss in 21, compared to four institutions from the prior year. The operating margins at the median is at the highest level in the past 5 years. And looking at the operating cash flow margin, significantly improved from the prior year. And you can see the range from 6.8% for University of Hartford to very impressive 31.5% Sacred Heart. For Sacred Heart, Quinnipiac is also favorable at 29.7%. The next slide. With the increase in the operating cash flow margin median, you would have thought that the debt service coverage median would have increased as well. However, that declined slightly from the prior year, but we only had one institution that had a lower debt service coverage from 2020, and every institution had a coverage above 2x in 21 compared to 7 for the prior year. Although this would indicate debt service is manageable, their annual debt service burden is high at 5.4%, which Moody's would be considered high. Their median is around 5%. Looking at the annual debt service burden range from a low of 3.1% for the University of Hartford up to almost 10% for Quinnipiac University, which has consistently maintained this high level of debt burden in each of the past 5 years, but still has been manageable given the strong operating cash flow margin. Next slide, please. You can see 8 institutions invested more in their plant than the depreciation expense. However, the median capital spending ratio declined from 2.0x to 1.6x, but it still remains at the second highest level in the past 5 years. And here, Yale accounts for roughly about 64% of the total capital investment for 2021. Looking at the age of plant, average age of plant declined from 17.2 years to 15.5 years over the past year, with the average age of plant ranging from 11 years to 25 years. So I think that you'll probably see an increase in this capital spending ratio, only because of the number of higher eds that are financing this year. So probably this year and for next year. I think that's about it. And next slide. Moody has a stable outlook for the sector. They expect revenue growth with slight increase in net tuition, but higher growth from auxiliary services now that students are back. They're also predicting higher endowment income, federal relief funding that will be recognized this year, and also thinks annual giving will be also increase. The record high investment returns for our portfolio, the median was 34%, so it's right in line with the Moody's portfolio, providing a stronger balance sheet for the institutions in case there's another slowdown. They'll be in a better position. Some challenges have to do with higher costs, labor shortages, and the rising costs of labor. And like I said before, we've seen an increase in financial aid. That's not gonna go anywhere. Affordability is always gonna be an issue, and the demands are gonna even be greater as we move forward. So that's pretty much it. I wonder if there's any questions.
Any questions for Michael? Any questions? All right, thank you, Michael. I think we can move on to the executive director's report. Jeanette, would you like to start with the authority update?
Sure, thanks, Peter. So just a couple of legislative updates. Last week, I provided testimony to the Finance, Revenue, and Bonding Committee on Senate Bill 382, which is our bill to establish a Connecticut New Market Tax Credit Program. And we're working to get the bill voted out of committee. We're engaged with committee members with a specific focus on senators because it's a Senate bill. And we are also engaging with our coalition of interested nonprofits and asking them to reach out to their delegations and urge support of the bill. Some legislators may be seeking to broaden the application of this program to include authority for for-profit entities, similar to the additional authority we were provided in connection with our childcare loan programs and the nursing home program. So it remains to be seen how that will play out. With regard to our other bill, Senate Bill 103, which is the overall remaining legislative package for CHIFA and CHESLA, that previously had a public hearing before the Higher Ed Committee. It was voted out of the Higher Ed Committee on consent. There was unanimous support, and the bill is currently in the legislative commissioner's office, awaiting a file copy, and will be going to the Senate floor in the coming weeks. And we are continuing to engage with the Higher Ed co-chairs and legislative leadership to keep that bill moving forward as well. And then lastly, I just wanted to mention, we have returned to the office again, working in our hybrid model of 3 days in the office, 2 days remote. So so far so good, and we'll see how things go. So that's all I have.
I have a question, if you don't mind, Jeanette. It's Sue Martin. Is there some legislation? I was on I think it was a CHA call, and they talked about some legislation that would require CHIFA to approve capital budgets of facilities that are have a CON application in. Are you aware of that?
So there is a bill that is out there that is a CON sort of focused bill, and it's creating sort of enhancing that process, if you want to view it that way. And it's saying that the Office of Health Strategy will provide recommendations to CHIFA with regard to capital budgets and other, you know, CON application related items. And so it's worded that they will provide recommendations to CHIFA. And the implication is that CHIFA would somehow take those recommendations into consideration as we're making decisions on transaction
finance.
So we have provided written testimony against that bill, basically saying it's really not CHIFA's role. You know, we don't want to be put in this position of being, you know, handed recommendations, and it's really, you know, we're focused on, you know, credit quality and credit analysis. And so the informal feedback is that the expectation is that the bill will not get a lot of traction, at least this year. But it is a bill, you know, that's out there. Yes.
Thank you for that explanation.
Mm-hmm. Anything else for Jeanette? Okay. Michael, client update?
Sure. As I mentioned before, we closed Fairfield University last week. We'll have our sales report from Josh Nikita from Acacia. A new issue that's on the report is for the Frederick Gunn School, formerly known as the Gunnery School, that'll be presented today, to refund some existing debt and some CHIFA debt. New bond issue that's not on the report is for Ridgefield Academy. They'll be refunding their 2015 issue, approximately $9 million. And the UConn Foundation is paying off their 2013 bond issue with equity, which has about $5 million remaining. That's about it. But I would like to turn it over to Dan Carasi, who'll give us an update on the revolving loan fund last cycle that closed out.
Yeah. Thanks, Michael. So the annual funding cycle 2022A closed on December 31st. Staff received and approved 8 loan applications totaling $600,000. The clients located across the state were from a wide range of sectors: childcare, education, healthcare, and senior living, long-term care. The loans were used to finance equipment purchases and infrastructure improvements. Such projects included IT infrastructure, medical equipment, roof replacements, and vehicle purchases. The borrowers estimate the project will impact over 3,500 people annually, of which 2,000 are deemed low income and 900 are BIPOC. So staff will reach out to clients and other stakeholders to identify a future financing need and loan parameters for the next funding cycle notice. We anticipate approximately $400,000 being available for that cycle, and that will be presented to the board at a future meeting. Is there any questions?
And you said 6 loans were approved?
8 loans, $600,000.
Okay, were there 8 applicants or were some applications denied?
There was actually 7 applicants. We actually had 1 applicant applied for 2 separate loans for 2 separate facilities and 2 separate projects. Okay. We did not deny any applicants.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else? Question for Dan or Michael? Okay. Thank you. Joanne, financial report.
Sorry. Thank you. Okay, for the month ending January 31st of 2022, our operating revenues exceed expenses by $2.3 million. Our non-operating expenses exceed revenues by $2 million, which are the grants, which results in a change in net assets of $221,000. There were no bond issues closed this year. Whoops, I can't tell if my presentation's up there, but is the dashboard up there? Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. So there were no bond issues closed. So those remained the same at $417 million. We did accrue the $1 million for client grants, which were paid out in March. As Dan mentioned, Dan sort of stole a little bit of my thunder with those revolving loans, but we did close 2 revolving loans in January for $150,000 total. And 750 since inception. So the difference between mine and Dan's is Dan was reporting on his recent funding pool, and mine is from the very beginning where you had first authorized $1 million. Any questions on that? Okay. And I think that is all that I have. Oh, one more thing. We did implement the fixed asset module in the MultiView software. So when we did that, we used to do straight line and then we would do a half year in the first year, half year in the last year. So this one is going strictly straight line. So what happened was all those tail ends, all those half years are now amortized over the life of the asset. So that increased our depreciation slightly on a monthly basis. So it's going to be a little bit over budget as well. Any questions on that?
Okay. Thank you, Joanne. Any questions? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Cynthia, the interest rate report.
Yes, that's Kara, just showing you a report that I received from an investment firm showing our economic calendar, market movements, and changes in the yield curve. I also had another article from Bloomberg that actually talks about the drop in Treasury yields based on anticipated increases by the Fed of potentially 50 basis points in May, as well as obviously the unrest in the economy and in the world. But in general, the benchmark 10-year Treasury yields, they've nudged lower after surging to heights that weren't seen since the mid-2019. And that's some of the information in the article that I provided with a link for Bloomberg.
Okay.
Anyone have any questions?
Any questions for Cynthia? Okay. Moving right along. Bob, market update?
Yep. So basically, geopolitical risks and market volatility have led to higher credit spreads in the municipal market, which has caused investor interest to wane over the past 4 weeks or so. It's also caused lower levels of activity, as can be seen in the transaction report. Mutual fund flows have been mostly negative, because of the world tensions and by defensive posturing by investors. Year-to-date outflows have totaled more than $18.3 billion,
And according to JP Morgan, both 10 and 30 year credit spreads for single A issuers are at their widest level since March of 2018. This widening in credit spreads, as well as changes in interest rates, have caused the investment performance of the municipal market, as tracked by the Bloomberg Barclays Municipal Market Index, to post a negative 4.96 percent year-to-date return. In terms of municipal new issuance for 2022, new money issuance totals approximately 55% of supply, which compares to 50% last year and 52% in 2020. Refundings are largely unchanged from last year and are down approximately 33% since 2020. That's it.
Okay. Anyone? Questions for Bob? All right. Thank you, Bob. And I believe our last update, Josh, Chesla update.
Yes, thanks, Peter. So in terms of Chesla in-school loan volume through quarter two, we're about $1 million behind fiscal year 21. Much of this is due to the pandemic. You can see in fiscal 19, we hit historical highs. I think Michael touched on some of this in the in his sector report, but overall, the industry has not fully recovered. On a national level, the industry has lost a million students since before the pandemic, and on a state level, there has been a loss of 10,000 students. So that continues to impact our loan volume. From a marketing standpoint, we continue our marketing efforts. Actually, in fiscal 22, we drove increased website traffic at a clip of about 7%. But at the same time, we have seen applications dip year over year by 14%. So our marketing seems to be working to driving increased traffic to our website. But that's not leading to increased volume. And we're continuing to look at ways we can track the users from our website to a completed application. Moving forward to our refinance program, we saw a huge dip in fiscal 21, again, due to the pandemic. However, we have recovered nicely in quarter two of fiscal 22. Actually dispersing our highest refinance loan volume ever for a second quarter. And this has also continued into our third quarter. I think a lot of this is due to our fixed interest rates on the refinance side, as our proceeds are not tied to bonds, and we have very low fixed rates to offer to applicants. Moving on regarding our scholarship program, the application for 2022-2023 awards opened on March 1st. That application deadline is May 1st. Thus far, we have 40 applications submitted, and there are almost 600 applications that have been started. Regarding the scholarships for certificate programs, as a reminder, this is a first come, first served basis, and any applicant that meets the criteria will receive a scholarship. Thus far in fiscal 22, we have dispersed 21 certificate scholarships, totaling $26,250. The allocation for the certificate scholarships for the fiscal year is $30,000. So that leaves $3,750 remaining, which would be three scholarships. Once we are through that round of funding, the next round will open on July 1st. And then lastly, going to our marketing highlights, we had a spot run during the early coverage of Super Bowl Sunday. We have sent out demographic and behavioral targeted emails in an attempt to increase our loan volume. And we've continued our normal outreach and promotion through TV, radio, digital, and social media. Regarding our high school outreach program, we've contacted over 150 high schools in the state. This includes emails, direct mailers, and also calls to all high schools throughout the state. Thus far, we've hosted 5 virtual presentations for Greenwich, Brookfield, Plainfield, Craig Magnet Schools, and Cheshire High School. And we hope we get more schools on board. You know, the presentations seem to be well received, and some schools are even surprised that we're offering the presentations at no charge, free of cost. Are there any questions regarding Chesla?
Any questions for Josh? Josh, this is Peter. I have one. One of your initial comments, you cited the decline in enrollment, both on a national basis and in the state. Is it your view or the view of the experts out there that that's pandemic related, or is there a bigger, broader trend that will be impacting enrollment for years to come? I'm just kind of curious.
I mean, I think it's a combination of both. I think it's the pandemic, and I just think overall, you know, more and more families are looking at the total cost of education. And I think the pandemic kind of just accentuated some of those pressures on the industry.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions for Josh? All right, thank you all for the updates and the reports. Moving on to the sales report, I believe it's Josh gonna walk us through the Fairfield sales report.
Okay, thank you, Peter. Good afternoon, everybody. On March 3rd, the authority sold $28,390,000 in Series U revenue bonds on behalf of Fairfield University. Proceeds from the issue were used to finance primarily the 200-bed residence hall, as well as a 440-space parking garage, as well as some additional projects and improvements on campus. The bonds are a general obligation of the university on parity with all other outstanding debt of the school, and were rated A2 by Moody's and A- by S&P. The transaction was structured with a single term bond maturing in 2052, with sinkers beginning in 2048. And the transaction was structured to wrap around the existing debt of the university to provide a more overall level debt structure. In 2048, the existing debt service dropped off for the university. So we were able to layer in this new debt service payments on top of the existing debt with minimal impact. Despite a challenging market, we were able to achieve an all-in TIC of around 3.6%, and closing took place on March 17th. Next slide, Kara. Great. So Bob stole my thunder on the market color. Obviously, we're all familiar with what's happening with the interest rates and the volatility in the marketplace. On the morning of March 2nd, the financing team held a call to review the market conditions and discuss a pre-marketing levels to present to investors throughout the day for pre-marketing in advance of our order period. As Bob mentioned, overarching concerns in the market really focused on the conflict in Ukraine, as well as the expected Fed action, which is coming up at their meeting in 2 weeks from pricing on March 16th. MMD was weaker on the day of our pre-marketing on March 2nd and on March 3rd. We saw cuts of 3 basis points and 5 basis points respectively. Supply continued to be relatively light. And as Bob mentioned again, we continue to see muni bond fund outflows. In this case, it was 7 consecutive weeks, the last reporting right before our pricing. And we know that did continue following the pricing of Fairfield University. So that's 7 straight weeks, and we're looking at probably about 9 weeks since that time in total. This shift in supply demand technicals has really put pressure on credit spreads, And we're seeing that across all sectors, not just higher education, but general obligation bonds, high grade general obligation bonds, especially are facing much, much wider credit spreads as well. So it's really something that's not unique to the authority here, but really across the muni finance in general. On the call, JP Morgan proposed spreads of 100 basis points for the pre-marketing period, which was in line with several comps in the marketplace. Despite feedback from investors was relatively quiet, even though the spreads, again, were in line with what we've seen in the marketplace as recently as a week ago. That quiet feedback really wasn't unexpected given the volatility and the negative tone in the marketplace. Really not seen as a credit issue, but as a market issue. Specifically, MMD has been lagging Treasuries significantly. While MMD cut 3 basis points the day before, Treasuries were up 15 basis points in the same spot. So the market was really expecting MMD to correct like it normally does, lagging by a day or two from US Treasuries. And in fact, that did happen. We had the three basis point cut the day of pre-marketing. We had a 5 basis point cut the following day. And in fact, after pricing, we saw 8 consecutive days of MMD increases for a total of 28 basis points from the day we priced the bonds to 8 days later. So needless to say, we were going into a challenging market, and we knew that going in. I don't think we really expected it to be to continue as long as it did following our pricing. But I think it was a wise choice to continue and lock in rates when we did. Due to lack of investor interest, JP Morgan recommended widening the spreads by 10 basis points for the order period. Following that order period, we got about one third of the transactions sold and had to cheapen it by another 10, which brought in 5 total investors to get the transaction done and sold and enable us to lock in a TIC of 3.6% before rates increased another 25 basis points since that time. So again, despite a challenging market, we think we timed it at the right time in advance of another 25 basis point increase, and we're able to get in a rate at 3.6 all in. So with that, happy to answer any questions on the transaction or the market in general.
Questions for Josh? Anything? All right. Thank you, Josh.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. Bob, talk to us about the preliminary memo on Quinnipiac, please.
Hey. Quinnipiac is intending to seek approval at next month's board meeting of up to $60 million to finance the construction of a new 417-bed residence hall as part of its $244 million master facilities plan. The residence hall is expected to improve the quality as well as the type of housing units that are available across the campus by including more first-year housing types and more single rooms. The residence hall is expected to open in 2024. Quinnipiac has 4 outstanding CHIFA issues totaling about $382 million and is rated A3/A- with stable outlooks by both agencies. Rating agency meetings are being scheduled for April 26th and 27th. positive aspects that staff has identified in reviewing the university are that, firstly, it has solid operating performance highlighted by strong operating and EBITDA margins that are well above the Moody's medians. Secondly, is the university's liquidity with total cash and investment to operating expenses, as well as monthly days cash on hand, also well above the Moody's medians. The challenging aspects that staff has identified are twofold. First are the leverage levels with pro forma debt to cap of 26% and a pro forma debt service burden to operations of 11.3%, which both compare unfavorably to the Moody's medians of 21.6% and 5.1% respectively. But perhaps more importantly is what's happening with the market profile, where we've seen declines in applications, enrollment, in addition to matriculation and selectivity rates that compare unfavorably to the Moody's medians. Thought it would be important, most important to focus on the university's challenges and also suggest that, you know, potentially next month, if the board should desire, we could also have a representative from the university talk more about the university's plans to address the challenges that they currently face. Staff has solicited the university for their input, however, with regard to the decline in applications and enrollment, to which they attributed four items. First was a transition from a third-party recruitment partner. That job is now being transitioned in-house. Also was turnover within the enrollment as well as financial aid departments. Reduced enrollment targets that were based on the findings from its 2020 master plan. And then finally is just the largest graduating class in Quinnipiac history. So those are the things that the university has attributed to the decline in all the items that we had previously mentioned. Plans to strengthen all these different aspects are anticipated to come from, first, the hiring of a new dean of admissions, the transition of the recruiting to in-house, and lastly, through the development of an enrollment marketing as well as an enrollment management team that are right now actually showing early signs of success with the fall 2022 undergraduate applications that are actually up 18%. They also say that admits are up 15.8% and deposits are up 19.3% versus 2021 on a year-to-date basis. Additionally, they cite transfer students for the fall of 2022. Those applications are up 18% and deposits are up 116% versus 2021 on a year-to-date basis also. The university is in the midst of developing business partnerships in engineering, business, and communications modeled after its Hartford Healthcare Partnership that's in place. The Hartford Healthcare Partnership is a keystone because it enhances the learning opportunities across the healthcare field by providing hiring for all Quinnipiac students upon successful graduation and passing of licensure exams. The university is also looking to add new academic offerings that include acute care nursing, environmental science, and a master's of public health. The university is investing, as I mentioned earlier, with their in their campus with their master facilities plan. So that should not only increase the student experience, but also help attract new students. Finally, the university is implementing its first ever and new national brand campaign that is being deployed across multiple channels, including digital and social media, traditional TV, and out-of-home advertising. Over the next 5 years, the university will look to stabilize applications and enrollment at 20,000 and 1,800, respectively. Staff intends to have more information available regarding COVID, the endowment, fundraising, and anything else the board would like to request in our final memo to be prepared for next month's meeting. And I can open it up to questions.
Okay, any questions for Bob? Questions? Bob, I've got one or two. This is Peter. Is this dorm that they're building, is this going to be additional beds, or are they taking another dorm offline? So net, they're going to have the same number of dorm rooms.
This will be additional. And what they're also looking to do is eliminate triples and quads. And so all the rooms will basically be singles and doubles.
Okay. All right. To your earlier offer to have a Quinnipiac representative available during the meeting, I don't think it could hurt. I'm not sure the board will have any questions, but if a senior administrator could make themselves available in the event there are some questions, I think that would be a good idea.
Okay, thank you.
Peter, hi, can you hear me?
Other questions?
Yes.
Somebody's asking, Peter.
I don't hear anyone.
I think it's Lawrence, no?
Yeah.
Lawrence?
I think he's pointing to
him. Yes. I'm sorry, can you hear me?
You're very low.
Yeah. Yeah, Lawrence, I'm not hearing anything right now.
Hi, Peter. Yes, I just wanted to ask a question.
There you go.
You can hear me.
Yeah, now we can.
Yeah, sorry about that. On page 50 of the packet, in terms of the discussion of leverage, you know, it shows in fiscal year 2021 that the total cash and investment to pro forma debt, that there was a improvement of to 1.83. And, you know, my question is the source of that improvement, whether that was attributed to the unrealized gains in the investment portfolio.
I would assume that that's most likely where it did come from.
Okay.
Peter, I have a question, please.
Please, Kim, go ahead. Thank you.
Under the room and board area, I don't see that we have headcount and capacity. I think it would be helpful from a room and board perspective is if we knew how much capacity they have for room and board and how much is being filled and utilized right now, and maybe the structure.
Sure. The current occupancy rate for the fall of 2021 was 89.1%. There were 3,820 occupants versus capacity of 4,285. And I'm just trying to see here.
Did I miss this, Bob, or is this additional information? I apologize. If so, can you tell me what page it's on?
This is additional information. Received yesterday or the day before.
Hey, Bob, this is one other question. Again, going back to the page 50 on the packet. You know, we talked about this one of the strengths being their days cash on hand of 933 days. But, you know, if you look at that, substantial part of the investments or substantial part of the endowment is being treated as unrestricted. I mean, how unusual is that to see such a large amount of the endowment, if not all of it, being treated as unrestricted?
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, you know, a lot of universities don't have like the benefit necessarily of having such a high level of unrestricted assets in their endowment. A lot of times you'll see them with, you know, perhaps, you know, 50% or more of their endowment being categorized as, you know, restricted with donor restriction. So the university is in a very, very good position given the fact that they have such a high level of unrestricted assets in their endowment. It gives them like superior flexibility for sure.
Yeah, I would completely agree. I was taken aback actually by the high percentage of unrestricted assets in the endowment. And I mean, more power to them. They are that's a really nice position to be
absolutely.
In.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Definitely.
Thank you.
Anyone else? So Bob, I think you've heard a couple questions from folks regarding, you know, maybe enrollment, you know, some questions on housing and how that dorm is going to be utilized, et cetera. And also if you could have someone available, whether or not there'd be questions posed to that senior level person, I think it would be helpful just to have them available.
Sure, definitely. I will follow up to just with regards to the type of housing that will be made available with the construction of the new residence hall. Of the 415 beds, 366 of those will be doubles, 38 will be singles, and 11 will be residential assistants.
Okay. And Bob, if you're, you know, in your next conversation with people or when you ask someone to be available, I guess I just have a general, we heard from Josh in his Chesler review talking about the decline nationwide in enrollment and certainly in the state. Quinnipiac's enrollment, FTE numbers are, they've shown a trend line going down the past several years, yet they're building a new dorm. I guess I would just like them either to be able to speak to that or you to get a little bit more information just about how all these things come together, because it seems like the trend line is going down in terms of enrollment, both macro and then specifically for Quinnipiac, but yet they're adding a dorm. And I'm sure they've thought it through. I would just like to hear from them, basically.
Sure. And, you know, I would just say that I think that, you know, if you look at other universities such as like Fairfield or, you know, Sacred Heart that are making substantial investment in their campus, a lot of those upgrades are items in which, you know, attract students, and keep students. I mean, you just look at, I think the success rate that these universities and colleges are having when they're able to offer, you know, new living space and up-to-date, you know, classrooms and, and labs, et cetera. I think that whether it's a college, university, or even, you know, an independent school, you know, you kind of want to be at a school that has, a lot of good things to offer.
You're absolutely right. I mean, we used to call it an arms race. You know, one a competitor school had something, so you had to do something even better. Or I totally get it, to attract the students.
Right. And Peter,
I guess the rubber meets the road if they're successful in attracting the students. And I guess
And the thing is, again, if we cite, you know, both Fairfield as well as Sacred Heart. I mean, both universities have had, increases in enrollment as well as improvement in their selectivity and matriculation. So, I think it goes sort of hand in hand. If you're able to offer, you know, the newness and freshness of an upgraded campus, that you're going to not only attract, but you're going to keep enrollment levels high.
Hey, Bob, this is Lawrence. You know, as you, because you said something that kind of sparked another question for me, and maybe you can get an answer or have this discussed next time, is the graduation rate, in 4 years for Quinnipiac versus, the sort of an industry standard and where that might be. Just be interested in knowing that.
Sure.
I have one more question, Peter.
Yeah, go ahead, Kim.
I'd like to learn a little bit more about that third party enrollment person that they used, because in a lot of cases in the industry, when they hired on a third party, you would do it for two different reasons. One, you would do it when a lot of classes started to go online. There is a specific industry and market for that. And so I'm wondering if it was for online classes and or I can see based on the geographic distribution that, you know, they're down a few percentage points outside of the U.S. and they're down also in the Northeast, while their Connecticut residents that came in much higher. So I'm wondering if it is like international students and or online class or something.
Okay. We'll definitely look into that and have that addressed in the memo.
Sure.
Anything else? Okay, well done, Bob. Thank you.
Thank you.
Look forward to that next month. All right, some final memos. These are each action items. I think, Bob, all three land with you. So we could start with Cheshire Academy.
Sure. Cheshire Academy is seeking the board's approval today for its direct purchase with Salisbury Bank and Trust Company for up to $34.05 million. Proceeds of the financing will be used to fund the design and construction of a new field house, a turf field, the renovation of an existing turf field, the construction of three new tennis courts, finance capitalized interest, as well as fund other miscellaneous capital projects. Cheshire Academy does not maintain a credit rating, nor will they be required to obtain one for this financing. The Academy does not have any existing CHIFA issued debt. The transaction is going to be structured with two sub-series of tax-exempt bonds. One series will finance the majority of the capital projects, while the second will act as a bridge facility for the Academy's capital campaign for the new field house. The campaign is currently in its quiet phase with a set goal of $20 million in pledges and gifts. Thus far, the Academy has raised $13 million. Although the review of this transaction does lie with the bank, I'd like to just make a few observations, if I may. Firstly, from the perspective of the school's market profile, total enrollment of 304 students falls just shy of the CHIFA median of 337. Other measures such as applications, the acceptance rate, and matriculation also fare less favorably to the CHIFA medians. The Academy attributes the fall in enrollment or the decline for the current year as well as in 2020-21 due to COVID. the Academy does expect to return in line with historic averages with the implementation of its strategic plan in combination with its new tuition reset strategy, which I'll address in a few momentarily. Enrollment peaked in 2018 at 403 students. However, Cheshire Academy sought to reduce enrollment from this level as it was in excess of the Academy's ideal capacity. The Academy has a capacity of 225 boarding students and believes that its ideal total enrollment is in the range between 360 and 375 students. The Academy also took additional initiatives such as reducing the number of postgraduate students from 41 in 2018 to 16 in the current and past 3 years. These postgraduate students were typically athletic recruits, and they received high levels of financial aid. Additionally, they reduced the number of international Chinese students. This initiative was meant to ensure that no one language makes up more than 10 to 12% of the population, therefore ensuring that the community remains cohesive while also creating additional room for domestic boarding enrollment, which has increased from 57 students in 2019 to 111 in the current academic year. Cheshire's new tuition reset strategy is gonna reduce Cheshire's day tuition to better align with income levels for more families in the regional area. Additionally, domestic boarding tuition will also be reduced. Overall, the goal is to, or the strategy is to increase enrollment. an NAIS market review indicates that 7 to 17% of families within a 60-minute drive of the Academy will be able to afford the newer price, more than doubling the 3 to 7% of families who can afford the school currently. Domestic boarding enrollment has been bolstered by the impact of the pandemic, and the tuition reset strategy aims to grow net tuition revenue from these students by reducing financial aid. Staff would like to request the board's approval today, given the academy's long history. It's the 11th oldest operating board school in the nation. The attractive terms and rates of the transaction, the benefits the academy stands to gain as a result of the project, as well as the academy's ability to service the new debt that will be added to its balance sheet. And you know, just from a debt service to operations perspective, it's less than 1% of operations, so easily affordable.
And this is a private a direct purchase, correct?
That is correct.
Correct, Bob Salisbury Bank, I think?
Yes.
Okay. All right, well, thank you for the review. Are there any questions for Bob? Anyone? Hearing none, I would entertain a motion to accept staff's recommendation on Cheshire Academy. Would someone like to make the motion?
Peter, this is Lawrence. I'll move.
All right. Lawrence has moved it. Is there a second?
Mike Angelini will second.
Thank you, Mike. We have a motion. We have a second. Is there any further discussion or questions for Bob regarding Cheshire Academy? Hearing none, all those in favor of accepting staff's recommendation, please say aye.
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 Is there anyone opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you. The motion carries. And I just need to alert the board. Susan Martin had to sign off from the meeting. And just so that we do have enough votes, a quorum, if any other board member needs to leave prior to the end of the meeting, please let us know and we might be able to advance the voting just so we have enough votes for the requirements of the quorum. Okay, moving along, Bob, still with you, Frederick Gunn.
Yep, Frederick Gunn is seeking approval today for up to $11 million for its direct purchase with Connect One Bank. Connect One Bank is a publicly traded New Jersey-based bank, formerly known as Center Bancorp. They changed their name back in July of 2014. Proceeds from the offering will be used to refund the school's $6.4 million Series B Chief of Bonds, as well as refinance an existing $4.2 million construction note payable. Frederick Gunn is, in addition to refinancing their existing debt, is also executing a separate taxable financing with Connect One Bank to bridge finance a $24 million capital campaign being used to support the construction of a new center of innovation and active citizenship. The school's campaign is currently in its silent phase and has a goal of $75 million. Thus far, the school has raised in excess of $52 million. Of this amount, more than $7 million has been raised or received in cash. The school intends to use funds from the campaign to fund capital projects, increase unrestricted funds, and grow the endowment. Frederick Gunn has fully fundraised the cost of the project with $29.4 million in documented pledges. Terms of the proposed financing are attractive with an initial interest rate, a 20-year interest rate of 2.75%. That compares versus Cheshire Academy, for instance, at 2.99% for a 10-year term. Frederick Gunn has experienced growth in enrollment, improvement in its acceptance and matriculation rates, growth in its endowment, and strong fundraising abilities. From an operations perspective, the school has been or has seen improvement in its operating and EBITDA margins and has a strong debt service coverage. It's for these reasons, staff would like to ask for the board's approval of the Frederick Gunn School Issue Series C direct purchase.
Okay, thanks, Bob. Would someone like to make a motion to accept staff's recommendation on Frederick Gunn? I'll move it. Is there a second?
Peter, this is Lawrence. Second.
Thank you. All right, the motion's been made and seconded. Any questions, discussion, comments?
And Bob, this is Lawrence. Just on the debt service coverage, does that at all consider the taxable debt?
I believe yes, it does.
Okay. Anything else? Bob, just a quick question that doesn't have a thing to do with the financials. When and why did they change their name from the Gunnery?
Great question.
I mean,
I'm not really sure.
They had great market recognition. They were well known as the Gunnery. I'm just kind of curious.
I don't know. Maybe Mike knows.
It was a couple years ago. I'm not sure why they did it either.
Okay.
It seems kind of odd. I agree.
Yeah, they had great market presence through the name, but anyway.
Yeah.
Anything else?
I had looked on their website when I was putting the memo together to see whether or not there was anything there, but there wasn't.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Any other questions? Motion has been made and seconded to accept staff's recommendation on Frederick Gunn. Further questions? All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Is there anyone opposed? Are there any abstentions? Motion carries. Thank you very much. And our last financing memo seeking approval, Sacred Heart. Bob, I believe this one resides with you also.
Yes, sir. So Sacred Heart is seeking approval today for up to $100 million. To finance a portion of its more than $200 million in capital project costs. Proceeds from the sale will be used to finance the construction of two new residence halls, finance the construction of a major addition to their health and science center, as well as finance renovations on three other residence halls and fund miscellaneous other expenditures. On page two of the memo, or page 81 of the mailing, staff has provided answers or further clarification to questions that were raised at last month's credit review of the university. Also, since our last meeting, the university received its ratings from Moody's. The rating agency affirmed its A3 rating and stable outlook, citing very good brand recognition, strategic positioning, consistent excellent operating performance, and solid liquidity. Moody's also highlighted the elevated debt burden. However, they did convey the university's ability for prudent financial management and planning, which would help the university to maintain a 2x debt service coverage. And we just received during this meeting, S&P came out with their updated rating. They also affirmed the university at its rating of A with its stable outlook. They cited very similar to Moody's, enrollment growth, selectivity, matriculation, strong operating performance as being benefits, but also cited the fact that the university has a high debt burden that kind of offsets, if you will, some of those strong attributes. So all in all, both Moody's as well as S&P's assessment of the university, I think, basically coincide very well with what staff has identified in our strengths and credit challenges. Won't go through each one of those, but I think that overall, we believe that the university operates at a high level within its rating category, as evidenced by their operational results, its ability to follow through with its strategy to enhance a student experience, as well as a growing enrollment. And so with that, if there's not any further questions, staff would definitely like to request the board's approval today for the Sacred Heart proposed financing.
Thank you, Bob. Just so we're all clear, as opposed to Cheshire and Frederick Gunn, this is not a private place or direct purchase. This is a public offering, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. So we've heard the review from Bob. We can open up with discussion after we have a motion. Would someone like to move accepting staff's recommendation?
Peter, this is Lawrence. So moved.
Thank you, Lawrence. Is there a second?
That's Mike Angelini. I'll second.
Thank you, Mike. All right, the motion has been made and seconded to accept staff's recommendation on Sacred Heart. Is there any discussion or questions? Discussion? Questions? Wow. I'll just make one comment, Bob, and it has to do with the memo. I really appreciate the section, I forgot which page it's on, I don't have it in front of me, where you restate the questions that came up in the prior month, and then you stated the question and then put in the staff's answer. I think that's a great follow-up to previous month's questions, and I appreciate you doing
that. Yeah, we'll be sure to do that for all the memos.
Yeah, I think it's great. All right, any other questions or comments? All right, motion's been made and seconded. All those in favor of accepting staff's recommendation on Sacred Heart University, please say aye.
Aye.
Is there anyone opposed? Are there any abstentions? The motion carries. Thank you very much. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
All right, we're towards the end of the agenda. Just a reminder, our next meeting is April 20th. Also, another reminder that the statement of financial interest is due, I believe, on May 2nd. You can do it online if you're so inclined. For those of you that are new to the process, it sounds intimidating and there's a lot of pages, but it's not as bad as it sounds or as it looks online. So any other business to be brought before the board? Any items for the good of the cause?
Move adjournment.
I like that motion. Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Abstentions. Thank you all very much for your time. See you in a month.
Thank you.
Okay.
Great one, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.